Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of September 30th, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
And we're glad to be joined by our friend and frequent commentator, Ms. Mariah Tinker. How are you doing, Mariah?
Doing well. How are you?
Good. So, guys, I wanted to engage in a little bit of a history lesson as a place to begin our conversation tonight. Way back in the day, you heard the phrase, remember the Maine, right? That was when the U.S. battleship Maine got blown up in Havana Harbor and started the Spanish-American War in 1898, one of those more blatant colonialist periods of American history. But long and short of it, in the Spanish-American War, the United States invaded an island called Puerto Rico and basically took it over, as the imperialist forces in the U.S. were prone to do back then. Anyway, the United States owns Puerto Rico, has since the turn of the century. In the early part of this century, people in Puerto Rico were deemed American citizens, full American citizens, but they're not a state. They don't vote. They don't have any representatives in Congress, which I guess kind of an oxymoron, but long and short of it. They're American citizens, but they're a commonwealth. They've debated over the years whether to join the United States as a state or remain in commonwealth status, back and forth. But the long and short of it is that Puerto Ricans are Americans. And as you may know, over the last several weeks, there have been a sequence of devastating climate events down in the Caribbean, both Hurricane Irma and Hurricane Maria, which I guess, right, Mariah, Hurricane Maria went right across Puerto Rico. The eye of the hurricane marched right through the middle of Puerto Rico, right?
Right, yep.
And had huge storm damage. And so as it stands now, Puerto Rico has been battered several times by these hurricanes. And DR, with that preface, let me put it in your lap to tell us what's the state of the population in Puerto Rico in, 6 days after the hurricane?
Yes, it's a humanitarian crisis. At least 16 dead. That toll is sadly inevitably going to rise. So much of the island without power. Hospitals can't get the tools they need. There's a severe lack of potable water, of food, of fuel, or power. And meanwhile, obviously Puerto Rico is the United States territory, but here in the mainland, United States, Donald Trump and Congress are basically dragging their heels, taking their sweet little time. There was a report in Politico.com saying that it's going to be at least a good 2 weeks or so before Congress finally, you know, prepares an aid package for Puerto Rico. And you know, Donald Trump went on Twitter and basically talked about, you know, all the debt and all the problems in Puerto Rico, almost to imply that it's, you know, Puerto Rico somehow brought this havoc upon themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's just, this could potentially end up being far, far worse than Katrina ever was in terms of neglect leading to, frankly, widespread death.
Yeah, I mean, Mariah, yeah. Have you heard that? I mean, there's a potential cholera outbreak. I mean, there's no water. There's very little lawlessness. I mean, what have you seen?
I mean, there's no water. They can't. The infrastructure doesn't work to get, you know, gas to people for transport of anything. There was a woman talking on NPR who had, you know, she had insulin for diabetes, mm-hmm. and it was supposed to be kept cold, and there was no way to refrigerate it. So all of her medicine was expiring, you know, and I'm sure there are many people with life or death medicine that's expiring. And, you know, there's a lot of people who actually evacuated from, I think I had this correct. They evacuated from Florida They went to Puerto Rico during Irma and then got stuck on Puerto Rico from Maria. Really? So there's, you know, that adding to the problem, too.
I mean, it just seems like there's 3 million American citizens without power or water. And it seems like it's a ho-hum everyday thing that we're not, you know, where's the cavalry, right? Where is the support for this? It's easy. I mean, some of the other interesting things I think to point out is that Puerto Rico is an island, right? So it's not like Florida where you can drive your truck from Indiana down to Florida. And it seems to me for example, your truck come down and fix power lines or something. I mean, this is a circumstance that only the government has the capacity to put men and people and material into the region. I guess recently, Mariah, didn't they? They're going to send a nursing ship, a Navy nursing ship, courtesy of Hillary Clinton demanding that Trump do something.
Oh, right. Yeah, I didn't get the full details of that, but I heard a little bit about that. I mean, you know, so of course there was all these fundraisers and drives and help for Houston, you know, the big help for Houston drive after Hurricane Harvey. And as you mentioned, it's some of these places, it's easier to get to them because they're land-based. But I wonder if this is sort of symptomatic to some degree of like hurricane exhaustion. I mean, I think there's a lot of things playing here, but I think something that I've heard talked about is if you have hurricane after hurricane after hurricane, at some point you just can't find the money to help out. And I'm not saying that justifies in any way, shape, or form, but I think that this is what you're going to see going forward if we keep having these big devastations is the people who are, you know, sort of marginalized don't get helped.
Right. I think that's a segue to the focus or the point that I'm interested in making is that Hurricane Irma, Hurricane Mariah are ostensibly
not me.
Hurricane Maria. Maria. Okay. Maria.
They call the wind Mariah.
Are clearly climate escalated. Right. Clearly now we're above the $200 billion number. People are exhausted. But I mean, are they more exhausted because most of the people in Puerto Rico are of color and have an accent? Or I mean, if this was a U.S. island, you know, whether Donald Trump had more property, would we be all over it? But really, the point I guess I'm trying to make is that this is a little taste of a climate altered future where it becomes exhausting to keep up with the pace of destruction, right? And it's much more easy. And I would condemn the United States response so far, which is essentially not paying attention to the underrepresented, the people who don't have political power. And is this a template for the future, which would be a terrible thing to have? Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's all the more reason why climate hawks have to stand up and say like this, not on our watch.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, because I that's what I fear. I agree with you in thinking that that's something, one of my great concerns.
Is that this is just, this is going to keep happening. And here we have, again, not to joke before about getting on my high horse, but here we have American citizens. They don't have a vote, or as clearly as much political power as South Florida and Texas do, right? But man, they're Americans, and there's a humanitarian catastrophe, right? There's no water. It's terrible. And we're all sitting, and the government is lethargic. What did you say, DR, before? The Jones Act? They didn't suspend the Jones Act or something to allow shipping to get in there?
Yeah, there's a push to suspend the Jones Act, which is this 1920 law that basically says that, according to the New York Times, only American ships can carry goods and passengers from one United States port to another. In addition, every ship must be built, crewed, and owned by American citizens, unquote. Mm-hmm. Senator John McCain, among others, has been pushing for the Jones Law to be waived in order for other countries to get aid to the United States while the United States drags its feet. And Donald Trump is basically saying, you know, I'll consider it. You know, when I get around to it, I might just...
Well, I think that Trump is just out of the question because he's not I mean, the guy's pre-senile, right? The issue I have is that Congress is not stepping in, right? If there were representatives in Congress who had voting, you know, had some sort of voting power, you know, we'd be all over solving this.
Exactly.
And go ahead, dear.
I was going to say, I'm surprised no one has yet noted the irony that while Trump is running around saying that Kim Jong-un is starving his own people, what is Trump doing with regard to Puerto Rico?
Right. And I think, I mean, that's not a choice. I mean, you're saying ironically, it's almost a laugh line, but it's also true. I mean, these people are in need. But the real point after we say that we need to support the people in Puerto Rico, it's the point that this is a taste of what's going to happen in the future as the pace of climate events pick up and more disadvantaged communities, right, places that don't have political power get slammed. And how are we in the United States, are we in the West, are we with more capability going to respond in a moral sense to these kind of outrages? Right, that gets heavy duty quick, but I mean that's really the question, right? Can you look yourself in a mirror if you haven't done something? Or I don't know.
Yeah,
I think go ahead, Dior.
It reminds me of there was an article. Remember the controversy from earlier this summer about the article in New York magazine basically saying that, you know, there's going to be mass human extinction as a result of climate change. There was a response to that article. The writer, whose name I forget at this time, but they made the point that the more likely scenario in a warming future is eco-apartheid, where those who will survive, those who have resources will be able to survive extreme weather events, and those who do not will suffer. And boy, we're seeing that right now, are we not?
Yeah. Was that Van Jones? I know the first person I heard use the term was eco-apartheid was Van Jones.
I know he's used the term
it's
previously,
powerful.
But I don't think in the context of that New York piece.
But I mean, there's a host of environmental, just straight out environmental, local environmental justice issues there. I mean, there's some ash pond next to the dam that's about to burst, right? And various kinds of Superfund sites on the island. But really, it's the vision of the future that is scary, where the rich pull up the drawbridge and take care of themselves while the storm consumes everyone outside. And most of the people outside that bridge are in places that are economically disadvantaged and probably closer to the equator.
Another article that I read that came out this week was the was in E&E News by Robin Bravender and Nina, I don't know how to say her name, Nina Heikkinen, where they talked about how Trump is, well, how really Pruitt is looking to sort of close down the clean power plan. And some of the things they're going to do is lower down the estimate of the benefits of stop, you know, of
social cost of carbon.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, here it's sort of like, here's the point, right? The social cost of carbon is happening right now in Puerto Rico. And amount of, I know there are dollar values assigned to lives, right? So if you look at how many lives are probably going to be lost, or what sort of quality life is going to be reduced for these people, for this whole, you know, area of the United States, that's a big loss.
A lot of money. Yeah.
And here we are saying, oh well, there's the benefits of the clean power plan don't outweigh the costs.
I don't think so. Right, and I think there's the irony of the clean power plan. At the same time, which we've talked about over the last few weeks because it's topical, is the fact that if you're going to rebuild Puerto Rico, it should be built with renewable energies and a smart microgrid structure, and just to do it right as a practice, an example of how you would rebuild in the face of what's likely to be additional big hurricanes. How do you make the island secure? How do you make, you know, distributed generation on the island? It is something that, as climate hawks, we should be pointing out to our elected representatives, right? This is a good practice case, if you want to put it that way, right? We do it. We do it here. Find out, you know, what lessons are to be learned.
And I don't know if this was a real thing or not, but there was some article by the Blue Mass Group that was talking about crowdfunding an emergency solar electric grid for Puerto Rico.
Really?
Yes, I saw that.
I don't think it was real. I think they were sort of just speculating that that would be a really good idea.
Maybe they shouldn't speculate.
I know.
You know, I guess.
And I would say not only is it a good idea, but to tie into another recent controversy. You know, how about the people who run around saying all lives matter as a response to Black Lives Matter? Why don't they prove it by getting some aid to Puerto Rico? Yeah, all exactly. lives matter. Yeah. Don't the lives of Puerto Ricans matter?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's sort of underlying stories we tell ourselves. Well, that leads us perilously close to talking about the NFL, which is hardly... So the NFL connection, for me, is that climate scientists are more or less the equivalent of Kaepernick, right? Mm-hmm. They're trying to do the right thing, and... The bully in the White House would just as soon they all, you know, would call them all sons of bitches and fire him if he could.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, mm-hmm. We needn't go there. That's been, I'm sure
oh my
the
gosh.
NFL has been chewed over way more than we need to. Mm-hmm. What did Lincoln say? Far beyond our power to add or anything. Yeah, well, there you go. Well, look, if you're listening to this show, if you think you're a climate hawk, you should be aware of, at least in my humble opinion, a humanitarian tragedy unfolding in Puerto Rico that is related to climate and is an example of an opportunity for us to figure out what we will do in the inevitable next time this happens, right? We should not walk away from Puerto Rico. Right? Any last words from you two geniuses? All right. Anyway, what we'll do is we'll put up links to most of what we talked about on the blog. It's at that'll be at massclimateaction.org/blog. Of course, you can find a link to this whole thing on our Facebook page at /massclimateaction, where you can link through. And of course, you can like the Mass Climate Action page, find out about other events that that MCAN's doing. You can listen to this show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio or Overcast or Podbean or SoundCloud or many other directories. You can also find us on iTunes by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. So we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for being here, Mariah.
Thanks for having me.
DR, thank you so much for taking the time to chat.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us, and until next time, be green.
Very cool.